This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
The following recording is of Tangos, The Exile of Gardel, a talk by Professor of Comparative Literature Reynaldo Ladaga on Fernando Solanas' film of the same title. It took place on July 26th, 2011.
The director is a very peculiar character and very central to the history of recent Latin American Argentinian cinema. He was born in 1936. He belongs to a generation that was marked by politically speaking, by two things. One of them, the Cuban Revolution, and the other, particularly in Argentina, by the alternatives and the comings and goings in and out of power, in and out of politics of Peronismo. It would take hours, really, to, and I'm not the right person to try to say what Peronismo was or is. People normally refer to it as a populismo, as a populism, but the fact is that Perón was a nationalistic, extremely charismatic leader who was in power between the early 40s in different ways and 55, and who defended at the time a version of a social inflection, say, of capitalism, not very different, in fact, to the New Deal in the U.S. and other like progressive capitalist regimes in Europe and America, but his rhetoric was quite incendiary and classically nationalistic in many ways. He was taken out of power in 1955. He had the absolute massive backing of the working class, and of particularly of the industrial working class in the big cities. He was taken out of power by a military coup in 1955. The party was banished from participating in elections, in and out, for the next couple of decades. Precisely the decades where Pino Solanas was growing up and becoming a political animal, say. And that the presence of Peronismo in Argentinian politics created a kind of like necessity to make a choice for leftists, right? Peronismo was not socialismo or communism, was not socialism or communism, but Peronismo had the backing of the natural constituencies of socialist and communist parties. So if you were a leftist, as Solanas was, you had to take some kind of position in relation to that. Ultimately, the position that Solanas took, as some others, was to alienate himself with Peronismo, beginning in the late 60s. But before this, what he did was study filmmaking in the early 60s in a provincial but very central school, the Santa Fe Film School, producing from the very beginning of film that was socially oriented in one way and really very, very heavily influenced by Italian neorealism and even by some of the most kind of like melodramatic sides of Italian neorealism, Rossellini, I mean early De Sica, some Rossellini, and so on and so forth. And in the mid-60s, he becomes more openly political, and in 68, he makes a movie that is central in the canon of radical political film in Latin America called The Hour of the Furnaces, or The Time of the Furnaces, La Hora de los Hornos, which is a kind of mega documentary on the horrors of Latin America under under American imperialism, and particularly Argentina, more influenced than other than the earlier movies by Russian classical Russian political film, and this is the beginning of a phase of increasingly open political cinema for Solanas that in the late 60s and early 70s becomes more closely alienated with the left of the Peronista left and makes a series of movies on Perón that are propaganda movies in many ways, right? The group to which Solanas belongs is in 76 when the dictatorship is virtually massacred. Solanas manages to leave the country, goes to live in Paris. The main places for exiles in the main places for political like the main destination for political Argentinian political exiles in the 70s are Paris, Barcelona, Madrid in some cases, Mexico City, and stays there from 76 to 83. Paris is a place where there's already a community of leftist Latin American artists, writers. In the case of Argentina, the figure of Paris is immediately associated with Julio Cortázar, who in the 60s wrote Hopscotch, which is kind of like late surrealist novel in many ways, and that created also an association for Argentinians between Paris and a certain form of political literature or art that combine, say, the political late 60s political literature and art with the older tradition of surrealist, radical, more or less politicized narrative and art and film and so on and so forth. Solanas in 83 goes back to Argentina, but we don't know now if the new movie was made in Paris or it was made in Argentina. He really was his case was different a lot of Argentinian exiles of 76 started new careers outside of Argentina, and ultimately either didn't go back or went back much later. It doesn't seem to have been the case with Solanas, who went back to Argentina as far as I know, as soon as he could, and who has been active as a filmmaker, but in later years more as a political figure in Argentina. He's been in Congress for a while, for many years now, and he's been in the last two electoral cycles, a candidate for mayor of Buenos Aires, which is one of the biggest political gigs in Argentina. But I suppose that we can talk after the movie of what the movie meant in context in the mid 80s, taking to. Have in mind that the dictatorship that was extremely cruel and was extremely cruel, particularly with the group that Solanas was part of, went from 76 to 83. So this was made immediately after the dictatorship. So.
Hello. Question around Gardel. I know Gardel's work a little bit, but I don't know about the politics of Gardel and what he meant during this period and why invoke him in this particular way, which was a little bit mysterious for me.
I don't know. I think it's a very distant reference. I mean, Gardel was a hero, a big hero of my grandfather. And I actually was really at this point a distant memory. I think that, I really have no idea beyond the fact that Gardel is a kind of embodiment of tango. Mm-hmm. But
he was never exiled.
He was actually exiled in Argentina, where he was French, and but he died very young in a plane crash. And I don't know. I think it's more relevant than the reference to Gardel. Who are the musicians that actually are appear in the movie? Right. On the one hand, Piazzolla, of course. Right. That Piazzolla is this modern tango in the 60s and early 70s and.
Piazzolla wrote the music.
Yes,
and he's not in the film.
He's not in the film, but the music is played by the. I can't remember when Piazzolla died, but he. I think he was alive by, still at this point. So, and I think that probably the music is probably original and it's played by the quintet that was the last big group that Piazzolla had. And then the singer, both at a certain point there's another band, right, with a very old man with big playing the piano with big glasses.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that is Osvaldo Pugliese. And Osvaldo Pugliese is one of the among the big masters, let's say, band leaders, let's say, what at this point was seen as the more authentic in terms of like of reaching back to the black, say, origins of tango, and that if you listen to that particular part or anything else by Pugliese, is more percussive more percussive and rhythmic than what we usually associate with Gardel. Gardel at the time, in the 20s, was seen as an agent of gentrification of tango. Actually, Gardel was, I mean, Borges, for example, saw Gardel like this. Gardel was one of the main figures in the transformation of tango from being a marginal, essentially instrumental and music and heavily rhythmic music for dancing into a genre that focuses in song and melody and made and radio and theater friendly, say. So in that way, Gardel is a strange reference there. Another singer that sings a couple of the songs is Roberto Goyeneche. Roberto Goyeneche, who was associated at the time. Roberto Goyeneche was a very serious cocaine addict, whose voice was by the time of this movie already a wreck, but who in part because it embodied the figure of the wrecked singer artist in the mold of Billie Holiday or whatever, also was emblematic at the time of the kind of like reaching back to the marginal origins of tango.
Any other questions from the audience? Thoughts or if I can get this to you?
I don't know much about the film. I'm really curious about what its career has been since it was made and what its reputation is in Buenos Aires, for example, and you know who saw it and what they think about it and you know what's its reputation now.
Well, his reputation, he's more of a politician than a filmmaker. He didn't do that much after this. He did a movie called Sur and a couple of other movies, but his career as a filmmaker hasn't been that, I mean, I haven't followed it, to be honest. He did Sur. I really haven't followed his career, in part for something that I have to say. At the time, for my generation, this was not necessarily a movie that we liked very much at the time. Because I'm of the generation of the children of the exiles. They are my strict contemporaries, really. And Solana's generation is a generation before us. And actually, I'm not speaking just about myself, but about what the feeling was in my, say, group of people. We were politically progressive, artistically or philosophically ambitious or whatever, and we were 12 or 13 when the dictatorship started, so we didn't have any real experience of that, of the period as teenagers even. When the dictatorship ended, we were faced with an alternative that was really not very, very good an alternative to have. What the dictatorship was do was absolutely monstrous, right? So we were naturally sympathetic to the early 70s left, and we were progressive, right? And they were our precursors, if you want, right, or the people that we reach back as examples. On the other hand, they were not very nice people, frankly. And they were, the tragedy, of course, happened because the dictatorship was monstrous, right? But it happened too because the early 70s left was incredibly naive politically and with a very disturbing propensity to violence, and there was a criminal train also in the early 70s left, right? So we were really ambivalent. We couldn't really identify with them, and we felt like movies like the El Exilio de Gardel papered over the more complicated aspects of the story in a way and produce an idealized version of something that was much more complicated, really.
Did you feel like it was a generation gap that was sought
into? I felt like it was a generation gap. I mean, it was understandable. I mean, this is an incredibly sad story. And the people who were doing this film were people whose friends, brothers, sister, parents, sons, daughters were killed in a really monstrous way in many ways. And it's an incredibly massively sad story, right? And you can't be anything but feel anything but solidarity and compassion for people who suffer this. On the other hand, politically they were terrible. I mean, many of them were terrible. And again, terrible in the sense of being naive, and terrible in the sense of also having been violent and in many cases criminal, right? So it was very difficult for us to position ourselves in that. That's on one side, the political side, right? Then the other side is the aesthetic side. It's a world, say a poetic, aesthetic, artistic world that is very much originates and is rooted in the 60s, right? And in one version of the 60s in particular, which is the Cortázar, again, mix of progressive politics and fantastic world making, let's say.
Street theater,
and also many of the classic signifiers of Paris surrealism, like the mannequins and the dolls and the, and a certain retro as a world of a theater and so on and so forth, right? That we also felt like it was mixed with something that I still can see, which is which at the time for us was very important. That is a certain perspective on gender roles, forms of sexuality and human relationship. Otherwise said, we felt like it was a very macho world, right? That idealized a certain version of heterosexual sexuality that we were, that was problematic for us. So so many of us, I mean, for many of us, it was not something that we were massively behind.
Had you seen it between that time?
No.
This is the first time since that. So it was very nice, really, to see
it again.
Yeah. There was a question here. I don't know if that question is still.
Same question.
Yeah, same. I see.
I mean, I'm speaking of the reaction that I know. I'm not a scholar of this or anything like that.
Revealing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very revealing response to, you know, what's happened to this movie. And basically, how people saw it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was true. See, in the United States, as well, people were, you know, there was a big generation gap between people who grew up in the '60s who identify with that,
mm-hmm.
and just a group of people who came, say, 5 or 6 years later.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, those kinds of political actions in the street, and that whole aesthetic that you were talking about, it didn't make a lot of sense anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But how do you feel about it now? I mean, looking at it now.
I feel the same. Honestly, I feel the same.
You feel the same?
I feel about the same, yes. So I feel I remember, I remember how I was feeling then about this, and I don't think, I mean, I find it more interesting now probably than I found it there then, because I can see other things that I probably couldn't see there. And I liked it. And at the time I also liked it. But I remember what were the like divisions at the time. And I feel like if I was again at the same place, I would feel exactly the same. What it feels different now for a different reason, let's say, because of what happened afterwards politically, particularly. It's strange because now it's very strange the way that Argentina keeps, in many ways, the political Argentinian political world is still anchored in that particular event, in part because the couple who has been in power in the last 10 years were militants in the early 70s, and so the whole thing is very much alive, is very much there. But on the other hand, I haven't lived in Argentina for almost 20 years now.
So I'm interested in hearing a little bit about the differences between, or kind of, the differences between Solanas' earlier work and this work. You mentioned Hour of the Furnaces, and I think what you said is something I hadn't thought about this film, the way in which maybe a younger generation related to its kind of elision of the uglier side of early 70s radical politics.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you know, the way in which he departed from that, both aesthetically, and also just kind of in a less overt engagement.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm interested in hearing what you think about the other side of it, which is that there's a reconsideration at work, which is very similar to other 60s filmmakers in the 80s looking back at, you know, the late 60s work, which is very radical both aesthetically,
mm-hmm.
and overtly politically,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of trying to reconsider what now after, you know, the kind of failure that that work brought about? Like, what now, especially in the case of exile? And
I think that what you see here is, I mean, by 85, when this movie was made, or 84 or 83 when this movie was made, actually the whole political world where the late 60s and early 70s work was produced wasn't there anymore and didn't make sense anymore. And I think that in terms of politics, that this is a movie that this whole generation at this time was looking for a way to re-engage in some politics that was progressive and made sense, right? And the politics of this generation in 85, 84, 85 wasn't revolutionary anymore. It was, in the case of Argentina, it was democracy and human rights, mm-hmm. right? And it was a building of a democracy, and that's all there is. I mean, the charts of like political programs that you see in the film, I mean, it's essentially democracy. Democracy is what, right? Where democracy, national unity. I think that Solanas was, as many other people of this generation, that was really tragic. Was left without a world in which their political program of the 60s and 70s, in which they probably still believed and were ready to rally behind, didn't make sense anymore, really. I don't know if that's what you were pointing to.
One more question. Sort of just a comment, but I'd like to hear your response. It seems to me like, when was the movie made, by the way?
85.
Yeah, it seems like maybe there's a little bit of a perspective of a nostalgia for exile represented in the movie. At the end, it says that they return to their daily, I don't remember the exact words, but it was kind of like their boring daily routines.
Yeah.
And and it certainly seems that the way that Gardel was used, the lyrics that were used were focusing on precisely how exile brings out this great intensity, this longing that actually, in a sense, creates the nation or, you know, animates the Argentine spirit even more than being at home. And maybe that there's something, you know, quintessentially or mythically Argentine about being in exile, la gran nación inacabada.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering maybe what you thought about just like being an Argentine and then sort of the identity of the Argentine always with exile. Exile from Europe, exile from the future that never came.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of bad to be Argentinian, frankly. that's the way we felt. I mean, one part of the movie that it was impossible for us to identify is that we were dying to leave the country. I mean, we were chasing scholarships. I mean, anything, right? Anywhere. We were really sick. Really, really sick of the country, in part because of this, what I was saying. We couldn't, like, I mean, the dictatorship was just like, not just the cruelty, but the sheer stupidity and banality and the general degradation of public life and the dictatorship was terrible. And there was nothing else. That was it, right? I mean, the democracy came, and that was it. I mean, and so I feel like my generation was trying. I mean, I manage, right? So, but and so the idea of longing for Argentina, I mean, it was crazy for us, but but part of that may have to do with the fact that Argentina, for whatever reason, because it's a country of immigrants, that couldn't produce a successful national myth, or for whatever reason, it's not a society that is very organic or that has a lot of solidarity and that has managed to develop as the 4th of July in the US, we don't even try in Argentina to pretend that there's anything to celebrate about the nation or anything like that. But there's no sense of a cohesive body, social body or anything like that. Part of that, I have to say, and that's another side of the movie that I didn't remember that was striking to me now, is the tendency of the movie to identify Argentina with Buenos Aires, which is not the case at all. And I am not from Buenos Aires. I'm from Rosario. And I feel like part of the reason why an entire generation from my entire generation almost from Rosario left Rosario was had something to do with the problem of Buenos Aires, right? Of an extremely central. Buenos Aires, a third of the population of Argentina lives. It's a very, very, very powerful center of cultural life that at the same time is very inward looking, right? And so that identification of Buenos Aires and Argentina, it was something that it still makes me feel a little uncomfortable. Yeah.